Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Hi, everybody. Letitia Burbaum here in for Bart Zandbergen. Thank you, Paul, for queuing us up.
Always.
So fantastic.
You have one of those wizards in today that I've always wanted to meet.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited. So I am here to introduce our guest today, Austin King. Hello.
Hey there, Paul. You're too kind.
So really exciting thing about Austin, he is an investment banker, and it's really fun because we're going to dive into a little bit about, he is in the same industry as us, and we're going to talk about a little bit more granular, but we're going to start with, you know, identifying what's the difference of what does an investment banker do and kind of really understand the
Before
role,
you jump but... in, how often do the real people like me, the everyday people mm-hmm. out there, get to meet mm-hmm. an investment banker? He came down off the mountain.
A real live
carrying the tablets with him here.
I love it.
He's going to give us the real inside scoop because, yeah, it's what you say. I've had a million people come through here. I've read Wall Street Journal for years. I see the term all the time. I really don't know what they do.
So he's with Bousted Securities, and we are going to jump right in. And Paul, I have asked you before the show to make sure that we don't go completely nerdy on you and talk
I'm going to wave a white flag and say, what the heck? I surrender. I have no idea what you're saying.
Keep it high level. Yeah.
All right. So Austin, I don't want to know if you can just share a moment about, you know, who you are and a little bit about your background first and kind of what brought you to becoming an investment banker.
Sure. So like you mentioned, my name's Austin King. I'm from San Diego. I have a bachelor's and a master's in economics, and I hold 5 investment licenses with FINRA, which is the regulatory authority. Mm-hmm. And how I got started in finance.
Well, can I just stop you right there? I didn't know. So you have a FINRA license, but you have 5 different licenses?
Yes.
What are those? I didn't know there were 5 different licenses.
Sure,
be prepared. He's going to make you explain that.
There's a lot. If I had to guess, there's over 30 total. But
wow.
Mine are investment banking, Series 79, Series 7, which is like a broker that you normally see at like Morgan Stanley, for example.
Right.
And advisory, which is a non-commission-based license, and all the blue sky laws and continuing education. So
yeah, right.
It takes a while to accumulate. And for the listeners out there, if you're going to talk to any financial advisor, I would make sure they're licensed.
Absolutely.
More than my barber, he's licensed.
That's always my favorite.
take all the hot tips at the barbershop with a grain of salt.
Yeah, please.
So did you know when you were younger all these things? Have you learned along the way, or did you set out in college and say, I'm aiming at this goal?
That's a good question. So I got started in finance. I wanted to be a CFO of a company, an individual company. And, you know, somewhere along the way, I realized that's kind of, you know, maybe slightly more risky because you kind of have all your eggs in one basket mm. versus if you're in, you know, banking, you can work with a lot of different companies and kind of, you know, adjust as the market adjusts to, you know, things that are increasing. Maybe if your segment's decreasing, it'd be like a merger or, you know, even something like bankruptcy advisory. And so, you know, I actually started an investment events group that, mm-hmm. that grew into, you know, multi-thousands of people. And I've done a lot of investment events, which has kind of brought me here today. And no, you never stop learning. That's one of the things I like about banking. You can learn. It's difficult, but it also makes it fun and interesting. You can never stop learning.
I love that.
You can always
that.
Learn more.
That's so great.
And the only other question, and then I'll shut up for a while.
No,
here.
You're good.
What confuses me is the term investment banker. It sounds like you've got the bankroll to bankroll investments. That's not true. You guys aren't the ones that write the check. You're not like VCs or whatever that invest money. You're helping raise investments for...
Yes, primarily, Paul, that's correct. You look for different constituencies of investors who, you know, it's kind of like a matchmaking position where you match, you know, qualified and interested investors up with an issuer or a company that's issuing the stock, and you kind of match them up together and you know, based on the analysis, create positive outcomes for the investors in the different groups.
So maybe you want to describe a little bit more about what an investment banker does opposed to some of the other, like you said, the VCs or other advisors that are out there.
Yeah, and where do you fit into the spectrum? Mm-hmm. We hear angels and VCs right. and accelerators, and there are certainly lawyers that you need to write the prospectus and the
Absolutely.
Offerings and all these things.
So we'll start off with the service providers, which would be the accountants, the legal, and, you know, investment relations team, which is also important. They're the unlicensed groups that kind of do road shows or local and international and national presentations for the company. So you kind of line all those groups up. You work with issuers and different companies that are looking for investment to go public, a lot of private investment rounds. And then you work with the investor groups that are interested in that investment, and then along the way you do all the analysis too. So that's kind of why I like it. It's not too focused on any one thing, which kind of keeps it fresh.
Dealing with all of them. You're having
As you can imagine, if you did all financial analysis, you could get weary of that, or if it's all presentations, same situation. So I like it because it's a nice balance.
And who are the investor groups? Are they actual, funds that have all bandied together and raised money from other people, or are they just wealthy individuals and high net worth individuals? And
it's all the above. I mean, you have what's called an angel investor, who's kind of a high net worth, high net worth individual that has interest, it has the ability to kind of analyze different investments and kind of goes out on their own, to pooled resources that are in your retirement accounts. I mean, you can take a look at your retirement statements and see the big names on there. Those are your individual investors, pooled assets that would be called an institutional investor at that point. Up into private equity funds and venture capital funds, which is kind of, either investing on behalf of a principal or a group of high net worth investors that have pooled their money in that way.
So, and it seems like they all have a different agenda.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, one deal won't, that has a higher amount of risk, maybe their pre-revenue wouldn't appeal as much. And a lot of times to, institutional investors that might be more interested in like municipal bonds, for example.
They want safe returns for their members. Yeah.
It's kind of a balanced approach. So some of the, instead of sitting in cash, you might invest in a certificate of deposit or like municipal bonds, which have tax advantages, et cetera, and then take a smaller portion to, higher risk, higher reward type endeavors.
Is there any specific type of clientele that you see the most frequent on a day-to-day basis?
I myself focus on more institutional investors and haven't worked as much with, the high net worth, as they're known, mm-hmm. or mass affluent investors. So mm-hmm. kind of the professional groups.
All of Letitia's clients here, the wealthy folks here.
We work together.
Sure. Well, I mean, Letitia's clients would be probably interested in like municipal bonds because mm-hmm. they have tax benefits and they're on the safer side, or like family offices, which is, if your level of wealth is so much that you need a team of people to manage it, mm-hmm. then you start what's called a family office. And those groups don't necessarily want to strike it rich. They want to stay rich.
Exactly. Right. So they've all got a different
It's a big theme.
Outlook that they're looking for. And the angel investor, he's trying to, we do a show with some angel investors here called Accelerate OC, and they bring in angels all the time. And they're really trying to bet on the jockey. That's what they said, more than just the plan. You got a great plan. I like it, but I'm betting on you to carry this through. And then, of course, they want to see some sort of big multiple return. It eventually, there's an exit. They're going to get out of this thing here and sell it to somebody or raise money. And
well, so true, Paul. I mean, as you can probably appreciate, the jockey, as you mentioned, is the guy or gal executing the plan. So your plan has to be good to start out with. But, maybe a great jockey can encourage the horse to win the race.
Exactly, right. Or a bad jockey will take him in the wrong direction.
Bad jockey riding as, Seabiscuit might not win. So.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was fascinating. All right. So you guys, though, deal with all these people. And do you deal with just a certain level? I picture investment bankers as the end of the chain. There's sort of the angel who starts the ball rolling and puts some money into it, and it gets big enough, some VCs come along and put some money into it, and they want to see a turnaround and an exit. And then at some point, you're going to take this thing public, I guess, or you're going to try and get bigger institutional investors in it to raise the capital. And that's somewhere in that stage seems to be where you guys start. I need you.
Yeah, what level in the process are you?
Well, that's an interesting topic. I'd say that's generally correct, and you'd want to, what those are called that you mentioned is like your investment stage. So you're kind of pre-revenue, early or seed stage, and then you're, you know, series A, B, C, and then you can keep going depending on your...
And those are what, different levels of offering
like
where you can raise money?
Series A would be like after a seed or an early round. Or
a
like
seed investment. So that's when they're getting their initial investment.
Right. And but here's an interesting caveat is that some of the laws in the U.S. are preclude a company from making revenue, which are...
What?
Yeah. I know, right?
That's me. Like I'm precluded from making revenue.
Like in health and biotech, you have the FDA, which... A lot of people know you have to. There's three phases essentially, and you have to get through all these three phases of development before you're able to go to market. So, you could have the next, you know,
super drug,
say Viagra or something.
Yeah, right.
And not be able to market it until you get through these phases, which are very expensive. So you can go years and years and years without any revenue, but with the potential to, you know, be the next, you know, quote unquote super drugs. So there's kind of interesting dynamic there.
But that's also why investors have to have certain level of financials and accreditation to be able to get into these investments, because they have to be able to hold a long duration of time, right?
That's right. And that goes to the point that most of the listeners or people that we all know, or a lot of people, own a home. And without knowing much about, potentially knowing much about investments, you're a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. Versus the opposite is not true of, like, you know, a biotech investor. It's a very specialized market, to where if you were going to an angel group, it would be a group of physicians. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's a lot of healthcare funds that want to invest in those things, and it's kind of highly specialized and segmented.
Is there a segment that you know better than others, that you, or do you take any deal and try and figure it out?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's the big, like, broad stroke, you know, industries, I'll call them, or indications, which would be like cancer drugs or medical devices. Mm-hmm.
That's big in Orange County. Here, tons and tons of companies doing medical devices. And there are VCs that will come in and say, don't show me anything but a medical device. That's what I know.
That's
what I like. I feel comfortable in. Don't show me a movie project or something, or a new clothing company.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, two of the biggest industries in Orange County are health and wellness and real estate. So, you know, I also say that a medical device generally has a shorter path to approval than a drug. And if you think about it,
it makes
sense. You're not putting, you know, a chemical in someone's body. A lot of times it's outside the body, and it doesn't have the same potential as reacting or causing any side effects, et cetera.
What are some of your clients that are coming to you? What are some of the investment types or products that you feel, not specific, that you hear a lot of it or a lot of buzz around? People come to you and say, what's hot right now?
Yeah,
that's a good question. I think what is hot and what we're seeing a lot of is pet care and pet medicine.
Pet care?
Pet medicine. Mm. Mm-hmm.
We had a company the other day doing cannabis for pets.
Sure.
To calm them down or whatever. And I thought, cannabis and pets.
It makes sense, because I hear these stories, and when I talk to clients and expenses, the amount of money people are spending on taking care of their animals,
Fido and Fluffy,
is actually a line. It could be a large item on their expenses. So I understand, but that'd be interesting to see a little bit more about how that's what people are looking for now.
A lot of people, you know, there's been studies that say a lot of people like their pets more than they do other people. So
that's probably true in my family here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So people love their pets. And if you just think about it anecdotally, maybe you want to give you know, Fluffy or Fido some CBD or some cannabis rather than some Xanax before you fly across country.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, that might be a little bit less toxic for them. So, and then you go all the way up the scale to like oncology treatment and you know, you see a lot of financing options for pets.
I'm laughing, but I've done all of that. I've had pets that were near death, and we threw thousands at them here.
Yeah.
And thousands.
Same
and in some cases, we didn't really have to spend.
Right.
But Fluffy's dying, and
you do everything you can.
You do everything you can.
Yes, you really
at that
do.
Moment.
Yeah.
And if they had open heart surgery for him, we'd be in there doing that. You know.
I can recall very clearly that we had a cat growing up, and it collapsed its lung by running into a wall.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and we had to airlift the thing out.
Airlift.
Yeah.
See,
it was like a 20, you know, extreme amount of money, and then it was on these meds like 3 times a day. For
I'm laughing,
next, like,
but I would have done it.
Yeah. You would have done the same thing, but it's just so wild to see that we do things like that.
Yeah, right. So. Exactly. All right, so that's a hot category. Any other hot categories? We have seen an upsurge, maybe it's because the laws of change in cannabis businesses here at the station.
Absolutely.
Enormous.
Well, cannabis is
nobody wants to say marijuana anymore.
A fast moving target in the sense that the laws are changing almost day to day.
Right.
And you know, as you know, the federal government's had this aversion to it, you know, up until now. And that kind of goes along, you know, the Security and Exchange Commission is a federal agency, and they have kind of, you know, regulated the capital markets accordingly, which is, you know, things are changing, but, you know, the wheels of change are slow. So you'll see a lot of private investment. And, you know, as you know, the industry is growing quite fast.
No pun intended.
No pun, exactly.
But, yeah, I think, you know, the major indexes, the listed exchanges, as we call them, are still pretty averse. There's a couple exceptions. But if you're plant touching, you're still, you know, in my understanding, unable to list on some of them. So that kind of stifles the investment. Does it, you know, people are coming out of the shadows and coming into the, you know, the light, if you will, and, you know, taxes, and that there's still some growing pains, but it's definitely.
Oh, it's crazy. You can't, I mean, these cannabis, like these dispensaries, still have to be cash because the banks, because it's federally prohibited, they can't open bank accounts or take credit cards. So it's a cash world. And yet we're assuming that it's going to come out into the light and pay taxes and everything here. It's an all cash business.
And you brought up an interesting point there it's almost, to me, it's a public safety issue. If you have, you know, metaphorically, a boatload of cash under your mattress, then you might be a target of crime.
Yeah,
and it invites kind of negative elements.
Kind of negative elements. Yeah, exactly.
Let's put it in
what what about IPOs? Does that come up with
initial public offerings?
Mm-hmm. Right. Thanks, Paul.
And there's two different. And maybe you want to talk about public and private.
I'm sure a lot of the listeners would be. It's been in the news. As you may have, you know, heard recently with Uber and Lyft, and now we have a big one coming out called WeWork.
Yeah, right.
That's been grabbing headlines, and people are probably interested. You know, it's an interesting topic for a lot of people who may not be that, you know, up on it. And this year has been one of the biggest years for initial public offerings on record.
Really? I had no idea.
Okay. Mm-hmm, multiple, you know, billions. You know, before I came here, we have something interesting that, you know, Saudi Arabia, the biggest oil company in the world, called Saudi Aramco, is thinking about an IPO, and the numbers thrown around were $2 trillion.
$1 trillion. Mm-hmm. Yes, I read that the other day. And yet, in that case, and in the WeWork examples and everything else, when they finally get to market, the general public is saying, nah, I'm not going to value this what you think it was worth here.
That's right.
Aramco may fall because of the conflict right now happening with Saudi oil fields being attacked, and people saying, oh, maybe it's not worth so much. Maybe
that's
it's a little too vulnerable. Yeah.
And if you've, you know, kept up on it, you'll notice that the price of the stock has fallen after the initial public offering, which is not, if you're the banker,
that's not good.
If you're the banker on that, then you have to answer some tough questions, right?
How do you guys work? I don't know if you can say this without any complications, but when somebody comes, I have a company and I've raised some money. We have some, so we're past the pre-sales. We've gone through a couple of rounds of raising money, and now we're ready to take this thing public. So we look up a guy like you, right?
Mm-hmm.
and you're now going to work with our accountants and our lawyers and the documents that we need to prepare and all the regulatory hurdles that need to be jumped. And you're going to do what? You're going to then take this to institutional investors and present it on our behalf and see if you can raise some money. How do you get paid? Do you take a piece of the deal? Do you get a fee plus a piece of the deal? Is it all over the place?
Well, that's another good question. And I'll say that, you know, something that the general public may not know is that when you submit a company or a deal, we call it in banker parlance, to a listed exchange such as NASDAQ, you want to make sure you do it right the first time, because if you get what's called a lot of comments back, which means, you know, clarifications, then that can add significantly to your timeline. And as we all know, time is money.
Yeah, right.
So you need
the money now. Right.
First off is doing a heavy-duty overview and due diligence process on the submission and making sure that it all goes smoothly. And then you go on what's called a roadshow. So there's kind of...
You go,
I love this. Yeah, please share.
Yeah.
So you go on a roadshow, and it's, and in this case, it'd be called a deal roadshow. There's such thing as called a non-deal roadshow. Anyway, you go around the country.
Non-deal. I don't even know what that. Well, that's for another show.
Promoting.
A non-deal roadshow.
Yeah. Without getting too much in the weeds here, you go around the country. You syndicate, which is, you know, other what's called broker dealers, which are the regulated entities, kind of like a real estate brokerage firm, but for investments. Mm-hmm. You syndicate out to different groups around the country, meaning you work with them.
And they're what, supposed to bring the investors?
They talk to their investors and constituents and say it's a biotech company. And so
you can get in on it, and here's what it is.
Yeah. You wouldn't really approach, someone in, like, kayaks or whatever it may be. You go to like a doctors or medical professionals, people that understand it, and if it fits their risk portfolio and a bunch of other things.
And you present this offer to them, or opportunity to them.
Right. You talk to them about it. And
is that your role, the investment banker, to build those syndicated networks of presenters here?
That's right. Yeah, you build the relationships over time, and it takes, a lifetime, and you continually learn, and you grow and get better. And you bring these different groups are interested in this type of investment, and you talk to them about it, and, there's a timeline on it usually, so.
And how does your firm get paid?
There's a combination of advisory fees and what's called a commission. Now, the commission is what is highly regulated, and you have to be licensed and go through the process.
And there's probably limits on it. You can't get 50% or something.
Everything's precise. It's probably really specific on each individual investment.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you negotiate that with the company, and there's a range that's kind of standard. And you try to price the deal to correspond with the difficulty of what's called the raise. So depending on how few investors there are, say industrial chemicals, there's fewer investors interested in that.
Yeah,
most of them are what's called strategic investors, which are other companies in that industry. Mm. And so that might be more difficult offering than, say, a WeWork, which there's, multiple locations all over California, and it's very client-facing, and people understand that better in general. So.
But this is what your role is so important, because it's ways for people to be able to get up-to-date information on products that are being offered before it's being offered to everyone in the public. So that is a great opportunity, even for people in my industry where I am. I work with specific organizations as well, to be able to figure out what's out there, what's your opportunities. So it's a great relationship for everyone to be able to figure out, because people are coming to you, right? They're saying, hey, I'm looking for this type of opportunity. I say it's a doctor, and I say, hey, I want more return, or I want lower risk, and I want some of these things, and they can come to you, and you already kind of know that demographic, and you know that clientele, and you're able to provide them.
But is that you, Letitia, they come to, or is it him? I see, he sounds more like the quarterback to me.
Yeah.
I got the ball here. I'm going to hand it to him. Mm-hmm. A ball's my company or my product or whatever. I'm going to hand him the ball.
He provides like people like myself.
Yeah, he's going to run interference. He's going to plan the strategy,
ideas,
how to get to the goal.
Yeah, correct.
Recruit the team, run the team, call the plays, all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so Letitia, say, has a portfolio. Mm-hmm. Now, to have a what's called diversified portfolio, you wouldn't invest all your money in the strategy, but you take a small portion of it,
right,
which is the risky portion of it, which is, you know, as you get larger in size of your underlying assets, your investable assets, you have to be in more industries to stay diversified. So it's part of a
strategy.
What's called a balance breakfast.
Oh, she talks about this all the time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Banking, part of a balance breakfast.
Yeah.
And it used to be easy. It was just 60-40, stocks and bonds. Stocks went up, bonds went down, and vice versa. Stocks go down, bonds go up. Now you got to have all these, you know, non-correlated assets that don't follow either one of them and can keep you safe in a stormy sea here.
Well, you get
and there's more options out there as well.
Yeah, more options, right?
Yeah.
You could have exposure to like kind of a different asset class, mm-hmm, and there's been a lot of research and talk about the fact that bonds and stocks and bonds are becoming, you know, more connected and harder to diversify.
Yeah, they don't seem to work in the opposite direction. So what about all this now under the Jobs Act under Obama? We hear it all the time in here. They created equity crowdfunding, not just regular one where you get a T-shirt and help if you give me $20 here, reward-based stuff, where you actually can go now raise money to a wider group of people, talk to them directly, and it was supposed to stimulate. Is that supposed to do an end around all you guys? I don't need all you guys. I can just go talk to my friends and family and general community. I can advertise it more. I can talk more. It was supposed to open it up more. And what's that done?
Right. So that's a very good point. The government and the powers that be have decided that in order to democratize the investment industry and essentially the deals out there that people have access to, they've extended what's called Regulation A+, which is if you're under a certain amount raise, which for, mm-hmm, you know, you can look this up on your own, then you don't have to go through the full IPO process, which is the technical documents called an S-1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can go around the process or have a light disclosure, which saves if you're a small business, the cost of the regulation and all the the service providers and the legal advice you have can run into the many hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
So to open access to the capital markets to smaller firms, they've created this Reg A Plus deal, which, you know, it's quite substantial. So, and actually, we do a lot of those deals at our company, and it just kind of streamlines the process and gives access to a lot more folks, which, you know, investors are becoming.
But the fear was it'd be the Wild West again, and then again you've got less regulation, more looser advertising rules, other sorts of things that, you know.
Then you also want to make sure that you're partner up with someone that's like an investment banker that has the credibility, that has the licenses,
right,
has the regulation,
and knows how to look at this stuff and evaluate it.
Right, right.
That's a very good point, and we say, you know, that you want to be qualified for a full offering, IPO offering, but if you decide to go with less regulation, then that should be open to you. You don't want to start with, hey, we're trying to bypass the regulation, and which, you know, cutting any corners. So very important point, and, you know, always consult your lawyer.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Never, second opinion.
Don't do any of this without consulting people,
right,
folks. This is not giving you an advice. This is just education today here, trying to understand the system here.
Mm-hmm.
So is it fair to say that the investment broker is kind of the last one in the chain trying to raise bigger money, or do you get involved earlier as well?
Well, no, we get involved right from the start. I mean, we go from what's called, you know, inception of, mm-hmm, a deal. A company is getting larger and decided, you know, to
thinking
scooter,
of something, yeah,
electric scooter company. Hey, this deal's taken off. Now or communications company. I was recently speaking with the communications.
Or internet radio company. Yes,
exactly.
We got an internet radio
We're
company
expanding.
Ready to take off, right?
We need to do a public offering. Gordon Gekko. So you, know, you get as you grow, you might want access to public markets, which enables you to raise capital easier and grow your business. And when you do that, you have to do a lot of disclosure.
Yeah.
So I would never meet a guy like you because I would go to the Letitias of the world, my advisors, and they are part of a syndicated group that you pull together, a team as the quarterback to run this play, to play this game out and see if we can raise money for this. And you'd go to them and explain it. And if she liked it, she'd bring it to me. But you wouldn't find me.
Not necessarily. I mean, we do both. Really, it depends. Like if we have clients that are individual, like you said, families, then yes, they'd come to us and then we'd go to the clients. But
to explain
if it was
it better.
But exactly. But if there is company owners that they want to actually do this with their company, we can make the introduction. Mm-hmm. And
oh, I see. You can bring them in. They say, hey, you know, Letitia, it's about time. I need, who do you know? And you say,
I want to grow and expand. And I want to raise capital. What does that look like? Where do I go? That's when it would be a great opportunity to make an introduction to an investment banker.
So last question I have, how would I know if they're a good one or a bad one? What's the difference? And are there lots of people doing this?
Question.
Yeah, right.
So do I just go through recommendations? Or how would I know how to find and hire an investment banker?
Well, that's also a great question. Probably a lot of listeners want to know. The first thing that I'm so surprised that many people don't know is that there's a website that has a full disclosure. If you're licensed on it, you can go. If you're licensed, you can go to this website, two clicks, and you can view the backgrounds of any investment professional.
What? I have no idea.
Broker check.
Yes.
Broker check. Yeah, all right. Put that in the notes. I never knew that.
That's the crux of being licensed, is its full disclosure. So you can go on there, and first you see
everything.
You know, is my broker a criminal, for example?
Right. Like, yeah.
And they.
So you've been accused of malpractice or other sorts of
whatever,
things.
Whatever. Yeah. A lot of legal issues. So first thing I would do is consult that. And then it would be, you know, track record and kind of word of mouth. I mean, did this talk to references?
Because there must be people that fail in raising money. I hire a company, not your company, but I hire this other company, and they go out and I pay them a bunch of money as an advisor, and I put all this money into writing everything they want me to write and doing it. We don't raise the money.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully, that's a rare occurrence. And I think that it owes to the fact that if you go into a deal, you know that you can succeed on it. And, you know, sometimes you might get through due diligence and something's insurmountable, but I'd say 9 times out of 10.
Or they don't raise the amount that they hope for. So that I would look at the quarterback and say, we didn't win. You didn't. You said you were projecting this and we only got this much less. You know, the WeWorks of the world can't be too happy with their investment bankers if suddenly they...
Right.
come out and it's worth less than they all projected and hoped for.
Well, something very important to understand is that in an initial public offering, you want to release that offering when the market conditions are favorable.
Yeah.
If there, you don't see any, you know, why is this year a huge year for investments? You know, initial offerings is that the markets are generally at all-time highs. And, you know, conversely, you don't see that in the recession time, 2008, 2009. You know, very few
sense,
or none.
Right. So you got to tell me when to pull the play too. Here, you might say, Paul, with that radio station you're getting ready to launch here, that's not. This isn't a good time for that.
Exactly. That's a very yes.
And that's part of the advice of what they're doing as well, coaching and making sure the numbers are in check and you're prepared.
Yeah, I actually spoke to an issuer, a real estate trust out of San Diego. That actually happened to them. They were all ready. They filed all their documents, and then the market, when they were ready to go, the market conditions were poor, and they had to pull it. So that's kind of...
Which you would rather do that than have it fail and have everything
Absolutely.
Drop down.
Yeah, because you don't get it. Do you get a second shot at it? I suppose I could regroup and come back again, but I've already sort of left a sour taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah, it's complicated and expensive.
Right, and actually, for you know, a high-level example would be the Saudi Aramco deal. They wanted to go public a few years back and pulled it because market conditions were not favorable. And now here they come back and for another shot. So
and just as they do, somebody decides to blow up their oil fields and maybe screw the whole thing up again.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So that would be your biggest stumbling block is the market conditions.
Right. I know we're out of time, but yep. one last question we ask every person who's on our show is, what's your ultimate lesson learned? And this could be in business, this could be in you personally in life.
Could be about your cat, could be anything.
Oh, man. Well, that's a
hard
very,
question, Austin.
Very broad question, but as far as the, you know, working with financial people, it'd be like work, you know, hire a professional, mm-hmm. either Letitia or some, you know, on your portfolio side, or if you're a company looking to go public, you don't trust, you know, Uncle Bill, you go to a real, you know, licensed professional or someone with a lot of experience, and that'll save you a lot of time and effort.
But you know, I think, and I've never said this before, I think why so many of us do just trust, not just Uncle Bill, but whatever we read last week in the Wall Street Journal or what somebody told us or whatever here, because we don't really fully understand the complexity of all that both of you do.
Yeah.
And so it kind of looks easy. I can do that.
And well, that's our job. I mean, our job is to take the worry and fear out of investing. And so it's to try to simplify what we're doing and make it really palatable to be able to understand what we're doing and how we're doing it. And our whole goal, what we do personally, is educate. So, and I'm sure you do as well. But that would be my...
And educate yourselves, as you're saying. You're
exactly.
Always, I'm paying you to do what I can't... Yeah. I either don't know how to do it and don't have the time to do it or the expertise to do.
Absolutely.
And so I'm trusting a professional with this because it is complicated. It seems incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
It certainly can be, and you don't want to go down the wrong path and have to double back. You want to... Because it'll be much more expensive than, you know, perhaps...
But I bet there are a lot of people that do. I bet this isn't always an easy path. I bet it isn't a straightforward process. Yeah.
You would be surprised at how many times we see the guy second time around who's had a poor experience.
Yeah.
So something that's what I'd take away is work with professionals early and often, and you'll save yourself a lot of money and heartache.
How do they reach you?
That was gonna ask.
Well, a lot of it's word of mouth, and
so I got to go to my barber, my Uncle Bill. Hey, who do you know?
Be like no. professionals like Letitia or Bart, or you know, you build these. It's a very relationship driven business.
Yeah.
Because I mean, as you can appreciate, you don't want to hand over your savings, or it's a sensitive topic, so you want to make sure it's right, and you build a relationship with somebody over time.
And the Barts and Letitia's of the world have a fiduciary responsibility.
Yes.
It isn't just that they could lose their clients; they could lose their licenses and stuff. They have a responsibility to their clients that goes beyond just holding on to their business.
So it's a legally mandated responsibility,
right?
You know, in addition to you want your clients to, you know, have good results, but you don't want to. You know, you want to make sure you're working with someone who has to give you fair disclosure and be, you know, honest and, you know, all those things are so important. So.
Well, I got to give you fair disclosure. We've already gone 10 minutes over because this was so fascinating here. And I appreciate the opportunity letting Letitia, let me ask you these questions, because for so many years I've wanted to ask somebody and I either felt stupid and didn't want to admit I don't know these things.
No.
Or I didn't have the opportunity to sit down and talk to one of you people, because you don't come down off the mountain very often.
Yeah, I mean, this area, Southern California, there's fewer bankers, you know, especially in Orange County. You'll go get a few more in L.A., and then you'll see the bulk over in New York, which, you know, a couple thousand miles away, so you don't you know, see
I don't run into
often,
them, yeah. Right.
right, as much, yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Austin, so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, how do they reach you, Letitia? You got to give the plug for the show and everything here.
Oh, yes. So you can always find us at OptiVestInc.com. That's OptiVestInc.com. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. And you can download our podcast at Podbeam. You can download it on iTunes, iHeartRadio, you name it. We are out there. So excited for you guys to be listeners of the show. And you can look up Letitia Burbaum as the handle, or you can look up Bart Zambergen also as a handle as well. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zanbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzanbergen.podbean.com. The Zanbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show, or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.